You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up after 7, The Reveal looks at alleged abuse and neglect of people with disabilities at specialty rehab centers across the United States, going on for over 40 years. It's coming up after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, as social media gives more women in politics the platforms they need to reach voters, it also gives the public an easy way to bombard those same women with hate and sexist comments.
Studies show that some women may be deterred from getting into politics out of fear they'd have to face sexist remarks or hateful personal attacks. And it's not just social media that can pose a problem. In Wisconsin, some women in politics say the media and party organizations themselves can be drivers of unfair behavior towards women. And in a state where men still vastly outnumber women in the legislature, our next guest wanted to know what the experience of women in politics is like.
Jessie O'Poyan joins us now. She's a reporter for the Capital Times in Madison, and she recently wrote a piece about the issue called Handling Hate, and it's up right now on the Central Time Facebook page. Jessie, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So, Jessie, the first line of your piece is this: women in politics have to deal with a lot of garbage. So a strong first line. Tell us what exactly we're talking about here.
Yeah, so this story actually came about because of a lot of stories that had accumulated in my mind, I guess, after hearing them from different elected officials who are women. And it's sort of a thing that you acknowledge for a long time, like, oh, yeah, we all have to deal with this stuff. And then you realize it's actually kind of striking. So it's tweets, it's Facebook posts, it's emails, it's criticisms that are more based on appearance than on substance and policy. It's sexual comments, it's very vulgar, sometimes violent language. And that's not to say that men don't put up with a lot of nasty comments from, you know, constituents or folks who are upset with them too, but it just takes on a different tone with women. And I had heard so many stories of so many things that different women had gone through that eventually I thought maybe there's actually kind of a story here.
Right. And does it seem as though each woman is going through it individually, and it seems like it could almost be wallpaper to her, but when cumulatively, when you add it all together, it's actually something that it seems like it needs maybe to be addressed or at the very least talked about.
It is. And I think, maybe not a lot of women, but some women may be afraid to talk about it, afraid of coming across as whiny, or thinking, well, you know, you're in politics, you've got to have a thick skin, you've got to toughen up and deal with some of this. And there is a lot of criticism that you are expected to deal with in elected office, but some of this goes so far beyond that. And to not necessarily share that experience, you think, oh, this is just something that I'm going through. And as they start to talk, these women start to realize, well, this isn't bound to one party. It's not even criticism that's just coming from men. It's comments that are coming from women too. And it's this very shared experience that is not really talked about all that much.
And you write that the attacks against women, like you just said, they're not unique to women, but that they are, it seems like, more personal. How personal does it get?
It can get incredibly personal. I talked to a few women who had mentioned their children hearing things at school, and you know, that could very well happen to men too, but I think a lot of women are more in tune to that, knowing just sort of that playing that more traditional mother role. It can be one elected official mentioned being told, I hope your husband's sleeping with your best friend. It's words that don't necessarily have an equivalent for men, maybe, say, calling women the C word or the B word, or going after them for being more assertive in a way that that men just aren't really getting. And it's things about their appearance or more sexual language that can become violent often.
And so how do the women, and you talk to a wide variety of women across the political spectrum, Republicans and Democrats, was there any constant that emerged about how women cope with things like this?
There were a couple of things. Many of them had sort of the thought of try to ignore social media or stay away from it. The problem with that, of course, is this is also a really fantastic tool for elected officials. They use it to see what their constituents are concerned about. They use it to connect with them and to get their message out in a different way. But, you know, there's sort of a point at which if you're getting so much hate, you need to stay away from it. Some of them mentioned having, if they were actually in office, having their staff screen things before they read them so they could know, you know, if this is something that might be damaging to see. And I think something that hasn't necessarily happened yet, but something that a couple of them mentioned is just it would be nice to talk about it more with other women who are experiencing that, just to sort of know that it's out there.
Why do you think they haven't talked about it more until, I mean, I don't know if they will after your article, but why hasn't it been a thing where they can get together and share some of what they're going through? Because some of it sounds like it could have the potential to be traumatic.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's not to say that they're not talking about it at all. I think there's some casual conversations going on, and some of those do cross party lines. I spoke with one representative who said she has talked with some women just about things like, oh, it's hard to be a legislator and juggle your kids, you know, school schedules and activity schedules, things like that, or even sharing experiences of feeling like their safety had been threatened. But I think a theory on why it hasn't been discussed in a more formal or organized way is here in Wisconsin, we have a pretty relatively young legislature, inexperienced legislature. They just haven't been around all that long. And so there's sort of a feeling of you need to learn the ropes before you start to make any changes or before you start to organize new things. And I think there's some talk of just, you know, where they're not in a place where they feel like they can do that yet, but maybe now will be the time.
We're talking about sexism and hate that may face women in politics with Jessie O'Poyne. She wrote about it for the Capital Times in Madison. And Jessie, tell us about some of the people that you did speak with and tell us a few of the stories that they shared with you.
Sure. You know, I mentioned the woman who was told, I hope your husband sleeps with your best friend. That was former State Representative Michelle Litchens. And she was in the legislature during Act 10, which is a particularly contentious time for everyone in the legislature, and there was a lot of vitriol directed at men and women, and really politicians on both sides of the aisle. She had a couple situations like that where she mentioned, you know, people attacks getting really personal in terms of talking about her family, talking about her kids, talking about her husband. An interesting perspective, I think, was Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish, who's a Republican, and she was a TV reporter before she was in politics. So she was sort of used to this already. TV reporters get a lot of this. They get a lot of comments about their appearance. And she had sort of been prepared for what she might get in office just by having people email and call over the years saying, you know, you should have different hair, you should wear a better color for your skin tone. But even still, the comments take on another tone because, you know, there's policy involved and there's stronger feelings involved in politics. Both Representative Litchens and Representative Melissa Sargent, who's a Democrat, mentioned being on the campaign trail and having people ask, well, how are you going to raise your kids and run for office? How are you going to serve in office and take care of your family? And feeling that had it been a husband or boyfriend or male counterpart, probably not the same question would have been asked.
And you even spoke with a woman who I think said she was out visiting her constituents and had a business owner try to take her clothes off in some sort of setting.
Yes. That was Representative Melissa Sargent, who you know, didn't want to name the man, but had loved, you know, going out into the field and meeting with her constituents, had always done it alone, went out to meet with a male business owner, didn't think anything of it. And she says he tried to remove her suit jacket. And she immediately, you know, feared for her safety and now has to consider that every time she goes out to meet with constituents in a way that a man may not consider.
Well, and so here we are in Wisconsin. It's not unique to Wisconsin, but there are far fewer women in the legislature than there are men. This is true nationally as well. I believe it's true, you know, largely across the country, although the balance is a little better if you go some places in Europe, I know. But how do you think this affects the way women think about whether or not they want to run for office?
I think it gives them pause. I think it makes them sometimes second guess it. You see that your private life, your family's life, things that you wouldn't expect to put on the table beyond, say, campaign season, if at that, are going to be up for grabs at any moment while you're serving in the public arena. And that's a lot to take on, not just for yourself, but for the people in your life and the people that you care about. One of the women that I spoke to for the article who runs a program that trains and recruits women for office mentioned, though, that when you don't run for office, you don't necessarily get to not experience sexism. So you can run for office and you can try to change it from within instead.
And looking at issues of safety, so if some of these women receive something that could be construed as a threat, as something that might give a person pause for their personal safety or for their family's safety, is there any kind of protection that comes with the job?
I mean, it kind of depends. Certainly, yes. I mean, regardless of the gender, if there's a threat, you know, law enforcement is there to take care of that. Where it can be a little dicey is social media and what the chain of command is on that. So maybe something might appear to be harassment on Twitter and you might go to Twitter to try to take care of that. That can be a lot more complicated than something that's a direct and clear threat that you can take to law enforcement.
We're talking with Jesse O'Poyne right now, talking about sexism and hate that can face women in politics. Jesse is a reporter for the Capital Times in Madison.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you see this women in politics facing more personal attacks, sexism? What, if anything, could be done about it? And have you ever considered running for office if you're a woman? Did fear of this kind of thing, of online trolling, other kinds of harassment, make you think twice about it? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post and find Jesse's article on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And we're continuing our conversation now about the vitriol and the sexism that can face women in politics.
Jesse O'Poyne was with us, reporter for the Capital Times. She wrote about this recently. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think keeps more women from running for office? If you're a woman who ran for office, maybe got elected even, have you been the victim of the kind of online or other kinds of harassment, trolling? We're talking about that. What can be done to make things safer, more even? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll go to our callers now. We have Eric on the line in Madison. Eric, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
Hey, so one thing, and this is less a personal attack, but it's an attack I think that is against women, and it comes from congressional Republican leaders who, as they've been blocking Merrick Garland's nomination, have talked about how they're all afraid of a radical Hillary nominee to the Supreme Court. Now, anybody would recognize that Bernie Sanders is generally seen as the more liberal Democrat, so why is it that they're so afraid of a Hillary nominee? And I think it's because Hillary's a woman. 100% of the women who have served on the Supreme Court have supported women's rights for their own health care. And the fact that these Republicans are saying Hillary is going to have some radical nominee, really that's just code for that she would maybe nominate a woman or somebody who's going to, you know, support contraceptive and abortion rights.
Eric, thanks a lot for the thoughts. And Jesse, you kept it in Wisconsin for this piece, but do you have any insight about what Eric's talking about there with the Hillary Clinton nomination?
Yeah, I did keep this mostly Wisconsin-focused, but in talking to women particularly who are Democrats or progressives, I think they have felt like they've even witnessed some of that from within their own party. The term you could debate, but you hear about the quote Bernie bros, but folks who are maybe supporting Bernie Sanders and are implementing a sexist rhetoric in the way that they criticize Hillary Clinton. And we saw a lot of women in the state legislature here, Democrats who endorsed Hillary Clinton for president before the primary, got a lot of hatred for that. A lot of it coming from Democrats and some of it being comments like, quote, dumb C words, vote for dumb C words. So that is definitely an element at play.
And I know you spoke with Congresswoman Gwen Moore, who said that she feels that she's gotten and she has seen different treatment within the party directed at women who are running and also at herself. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and she talked about that, obviously coming from the perspective of a black woman in Congress, which is even more rare than a woman in general in Congress. She was looking particularly at a Senate primary in Maryland between a black woman and a white man. The white man was sort of the favored to win by the state Democratic Party there. And Congresswoman Moore felt like the attacks on the woman in the race were both sexist and racist, and a lot of them coming from a narrative from the party dealing with the kind of reducing the woman, Representative Donna Edwards, to a single mother, nothing more than a woman who had raised a child despite, you know, many other career accomplishments. And Gwen Moore mentioned constantly being referred to for the longest time in many newspaper articles as a, you know, former welfare recipient, and feeling like that was sort of the same treatment of just getting that dig in there and taking her down a few pegs for being both a woman and for being black.
We go back to our callers now. We've got Anissa on the line with us from Southern Wisconsin. Hi there.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
I'm good. Thanks for calling. What did you want to share?
Well, I'm Anissa Welch, and I'm running for the 43rd Assembly seat as a representative. And when you were talking about all of the things that women consider before running, this is definitely something that I talked with my family about. And it's something that was a concern for them, even when I ran for city council. But ultimately, we decided that it was worth it, and that they were willing to make those sacrifices, too, for the community and to have a positive impact. But it's definitely something that weighs on everybody's mind. But I want to encourage more women to run and to talk about it, because I don't think it gets better if we don't have these discussions.
Anissa, thank you so much. And did you talk to any women who maybe made the opposite decision that you made and decided not to run because of it?
Yeah, I've talked to women that, and part of it was those questions about how do you raise your family and how do you balance everything out. And I think women just take a lot more time and consideration before they even decide to run. But yes, I do know that this deters women from running.
Anissa, thank you so much for that. And there's a politician in Wisconsin here who had to weigh that decision with her family. And I imagine that is something that anyone who's going to get in politics has to do with their family, make that decision. But what extra considerations might women have to make when they're considering something like this with their family?
Sure. I mean, man or woman, you should be, I would think, taking into consideration the interests of your family and knowing that anything they do or not even anything they do, but just any association they have with you may be put into the spotlight. And that's something that they should be comfortable with. But because women are still more traditionally seen in that mother role and as being more tied to their families, you know, for better or worse, that's another line of attack for them in another way. And there's sort of a double-edged sword, I guess, of you're going to face those questions of how do you raise your kids? Or if you're a, say, single woman or a woman who is married but doesn't have children, you're going to get questions about that too. And those are not questions you want to necessarily answer in your personal life, let alone in your career.
Anissa, thank you so much for that call at 800-642-1234. As we look at sexism in politics and how it may be keeping some women out of politics altogether and might be making other women think about things differently and have to make choices. We'll take another caller now. Barbara is with us in Madison. Barbara, hi.
Hi. I think look at the discourse that Hillary Clinton has had to put up with from the very beginning when she was trying to work on the health care committee. She was a pushy woman that hadn't been elected. What did she think she was doing? And now she's untrustworthy. I don't think male candidates are held to the same standard that she's been subjected to.
Barbara, thanks a lot for the call. And Jesse, different standards for men and women. What did you hear on that front?
Yeah, there are a bunch of studies out there on this looking at, say, a CEO, one named Joe and one named Jody, or, you know, substitute gendered names here and giving them the same characteristics, same accomplishments, and showing that people are generally just more inclined to think that the male CEO is more fit for the job, is more likable, you name it. And women just face different standards for being likable. If you are assertive, if you are aggressive, if you are ambitious, those are not viewed as positive characteristics for a woman. You are supposed to be a little more demure. You're supposed to be a little friendlier. And those are the things that also hold women back in terms of trying to just get ahead, because those are things you need to be a leader and to be successful.
We haven't talked yet about Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley, another woman that you profiled in your article, and she talked a bit about how she said she got unfair treatment, as she saw it, from the Journal Sentinel in some coverage of her. Now, this is not looking at online stuff, but the media in particular. What did she say to you?
Yeah, she was focusing. I mean, she had kind of a couple weeks of unflattering headlines about a number of things from her past. And one of those articles ran in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It was a story about a case where she had represented in a custody case a man she had dated in the past. She had been dating him while she was still legally married to her ex-husband. Both she and her ex-husband said they were working on separating. They were working on getting divorced at the time. They're not living together. But the headline referred to it as an extramarital affair. This is something she took huge issue with, says she believes was sexist treatment, and putting a giant headline with the word extramarital, or the phrase extramarital affair in it on the page. And she believed that a man wouldn't be subjected to the same treatment. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, for its part, said, well, we have treated men the same way in some situations. But I think she did feel that that was a different standard for her.
And Jesse, just a few seconds left, but do you see this changing anything, your article and in this conversation for women in politics?
Well, I hope so. I think it has brought to light for a lot of these women that they're not the only ones going through it. They're not the only party, whichever party they're on, going through it. So my hope is maybe it'll bridge the gap a little bit on some of those bipartisan conversations, particularly.
Jesse, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Jesse O'Poyne. She wrote the article, Handling Hate, Women in Politics Face a Remarkable Amount of Sexist Vitriol. She works for the Capital Times.